Welcome to the deep dive.
Hello.
So, today we're pulling back the curtain on something pretty complex. It's all about how we handle vehicles when they reach, the end of their
End
road.
of life vehicles or ELVs.
Exactly. Europe's trying to update its laws for these ELVs, and well, it's turning out to be quite the challenge.
It really is. I mean, think about it. Millions of vehicles, cars, vans, trucks, eventually they all become, well, a huge source of materials. The idea behind these new rules is big. Get more back, waste less, create a proper circular system.
It's ambitious. And to help us get a handle on this, we're going, well, not quite straight to the source, but to a key player. We're diving into a presentation from ACEA.
That's the European Automobile Manufacturers Association.
Right, representing 16 major manufacturers. This was presented by Silvia Vecchione, just recently, actually, May 22nd, 2025, at a conference in Warsaw.
Yeah, the FRS Car Recycling Forum. And this perspective is critical because it's coming from the companies that actually, design and build these vehicles. They're the ones on the ground seeing the potential issues with the new regulation, the ELVR.
The end of life vehicle regulation,
Yeah.
ELVR.
Got it. They see the practical side, the potential roadblocks.
Okay, so our mission for this deep dive is pretty clear. Let's unpack what ACEA is saying about this new ELVR. What are their main worries? What do they think absolutely has to be in place for it to work? What's their vision, really?
Imagine being in that room, hearing it direct from the industry.
Let's do it. Let's unpack this.
Okay, so ACEA, as you said, 16 major manufacturers, cars, vans, trucks, buses. They're basically the main voice for a massive chunk of the European auto industry.
A pretty significant voice then. And they've laid out, I think you mentioned, five core principles. Pillars, they call them.
Yeah, five pillars for what they see as a successful EOVR.
What are those? What do they see as fundamental?
Okay, so first, a functional legislative framework, that's kind of foundational. Second, feasible targets, realistic ones.
Feasible, okay.
Third, really thinking about market dynamics. Fourth, balanced EPR schemes, that's extended producer responsibility.
EPR.
And fifth, this principle they call no fuss,
Nova us.
stands for no one fits all solution, basically highlighting that you need different approaches and, you have to accept there are trade-offs.
No fess.
Yeah.
That one jumps out. Suggests vehicles aren't just vehicles. There's variety. Okay, let's start with pillar one then, the functional legislative framework. How do they think the ELVR should actually be put together?
Well, their main point, their sort of core argument, is that the ELVR absolutely must be the single central law for automotive
The
circularity.
one-stop shop, basically.
Pretty much. And crucially, they want to avoid any double regulation, no overlapping rules with other EU laws that might also touch on car materials or parts, like, say, the battery regulation, ESPR, or the packaging rules, PPWR.
Ah, right. ESPR for batteries, PPWR for packaging. So ACEA is saying you can't just like copy-paste rules made for a battery or a box onto a whole car. Why not? What's the issue there?
Because fundamentally, a vehicle is just vastly more complex. I mean, think about the sheer number of different materials, the structures,
Yeah.
the differences between a car, a van, a huge truck, a bus. And they last for years, decades sometimes. Rules made for simpler things, things with different uses, different materials, they often just don't work or aren't practical when you try to apply them to something as intricate as a vehicle.
Right.
They really believe vehicles need their own specific, tailored rule set.
Okay, that makes intuitive sense. Trying to regulate a lorry like a juice carton sounds
Yeah.
problematic. What else is key for this functional framework in their view?
Consistency, that's vital. They want the same implementation rules across all the EU countries.
Makes sense. Avoid a patchwork.
Exactly. And this is a really critical point for them. They need a clear methodology how you actually measure compliance defined and agreed before any targets kick in.
Before the targets.
Yes. You can't tell the industry, hit this recycling rate or use this much recycled plastic if nobody agrees on exactly how to calculate that number in the first place.
Methodology first, then targets. Seems logical, but maybe easily overlooked. What about the timing for all this?
Timing or lead time, big concern. They really emphasize that drawn-out negotiations shouldn't lead to a sudden, unrealistic rush to implement everything.
Right, give them time to adapt.
They want a clear sequence. First, get the methodology sorted, then set targets based on what that methodology shows is actually feasible, then implement, and finally build in a review phase to see if it's working or needs tweaking.
Methodology, targets, implementation, review, like steps on a ladder.
Pretty much. They see that sequence as, well, non-negotiable.
And who should be figuring out all those details, the methodologies, and the nitty-gritty rules?
ACEA was very strong on this. Active industry engagement is crucial. The manufacturers, the ones who actually have to do this stuff, make circularity happen.
They need to be at the table.
Deeply involved, especially in shaping the secondary legislation, the detailed rules that come after the main regulation. Their argument is, look, the people who understand the manufacturing, the materials, the recycling realities, right now, they're best placed to help write rules that are practical and, you know, actually effective. And it's not just setting the rules. Enforcement matters too. Part of a functional framework is making sure it's actually followed.
Of course.
So ACEA called for comprehensive inspections, and they brought up a long-running issue. The Certificate of Destruction, the COD.
Yes, the official death certificate for a car.
Exactly. They stressed the need for the COD to finally become what it was meant to be, a standard EU-wide tool for tracking and deregistering vehicles properly. Without that reliable tracking, the whole system kind of falls apart.
Okay, so summing up framework. Clear, consistent, sector-specific rules. Developed with industry input. Implemented step by step. Properly enforced with tools like the COD. Makes sense. Let's move on to what's often the most contentious bit. The targets. What's ACEA saying about setting feasible targets, especially for, say, using recycled plastics in new cars?
Feasibility. That's definitely their key word here. They argue targets have to be realistic. They need to reflect what's actually possible technically. And this is important, what the market can actually supply in terms of high-quality recycled material suitable for cars.
Okay, so not just wishful thinking. What does that look like for recycled plastics specifically?
Well, they proposed a very specific stepped approach.
Okay, tell me about the steps.
They suggested starting with a 15% recycled plastic content target. But giving time for it. Within 72 months, that's 6 years after the regulation comes into force.
6 years to get to 15%.
Yeah. Then a second step, up to 20%. But only 5 years after that first 15% target is actually achieved and in place.
So a gradual ramp up over what, potentially 11 years or more to hit 20%. Why such a long time frame, especially for that jump from 15% to 20%?
It goes back to that feasibility point and market readiness. They specifically asked for a review clause before that second 20% step happens.
Reality check.
Exactly, like they have in the battery and packaging rules. This review would involve proper feasibility studies. Can the market actually supply enough quality recycled plastic? Can the technical challenges of putting 20% into all sorts of different car parts actually be met reliably?
So they're signaling that going from 15% to 20% isn't just a little bit more. It might be a significant technical leap.
That seems to be the underlying message. It might need new materials, new processes, things that need proving out before you mandate them across the board.
Makes sense to build in those checks.
Yeah.
Now, where should these recycled plastics come from? Does ACEA have a view on specific sources? Like, does it have to be plastic from old cars?
No, they argue strongly for what they call inclusive sourcing.
Inclusive sourcing.
Meaning the rules shouldn't dictate where the recycled material comes from, as long as it meets the quality standards. They want the ability to use material from, say, pre-consumer waste that's scrap from the manufacturing process itself.
Okay.
Also, workshop waste stuff from repairs and maintenance. And materials from advanced recycling, like chemical recycling.
And who decides which of those sources to use? The manufacturers. The recyclers.
They believe the market should decide that. They were very explicit. There should be no mandated closed-loop targets in the regulation.
No rules saying car plastic must go back into cars.
Correct. They want the flexibility for the market to find the most efficient and effective ways to source and use recycled stuff. Maybe using old car plastic back in cars is best sometimes. Maybe other times it's better used in, I don't know, construction materials or something else.
So let the market find the highest value use.
Precisely. Mandating a closed loop for everything, they argue, can be technically really hard. It can be inefficient economically. And it could even stifle innovation if there are actually better uses for that recycled material somewhere else.
Interesting. Don't lock it in unnecessarily.
And that fits with their call for a technology-neutral approach overall. They want the regulation to encourage innovation in all kinds of recycling and recovery, not pick winners or favor one specific technology or loop.
Okay, this market-driven idea leads us neatly into their next pillar, doesn't it? Market dynamics. ACEA made a point here that really struck me about how ELVs are different from other waste streams.
They did, yeah. They kicked off that section by stating quite clearly that end-of-life vehicles, unlike maybe, say, household packaging waste, are actually valuable. There are enough valuable materials inside metals especially that recycling them is generally profitable for the companies that do it.
Right, that's a big difference.
Well,
if it's already profitable, Why the need for such detailed regulation? Where do they see the market failing, if at all?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It's a bit of a tension. They say it's profitable overall, but they also point to specific problems, friction points in the market.
Like what?
A big one seems to be transparency, particularly financial transparency. They stated that producers, the car manufacturers, find it very difficult to actually verify the profit claims made by the waste operators, the recyclers.
Ah, so the recyclers say this cost us X or made us Y, and the manufacturers are saying, well, how do we know?
Kind of. And this lack of transparency, from ACA's perspective, creates risks. Financial inconsistencies, difficulty understanding where costs really lie, who benefits how much. It makes the whole system murky.
Okay, so the system might make money overall, but the flows between the players aren't clear.
That seems to be the point. And linked to that, they argued that only waste operators who are actually contracted by their producers should be able to claim any compensation if there are deficits in certain operations.
So pushing back against just any recycler being able to claim money from the EPR pot.
Right. And they were quite firm that producers should have the right to define and organize their own collection systems for ELVs. They argued against what they call non-free market approaches that might dictate who collects the cars or how it's done.
So producers want control over their network and clarity on the money side of things within that network. What about the fees involved in EPR?
They think the criteria used for fee modulation need a serious rethink.
Fee modulation, that's where the fee a producer pays is adjusted based on how recyclable their car design is, right?
Exactly. Higher fees for harder to recycle designs, lower fees for easier ones. ACEA feels a lot of the current or proposed criteria just aren't feasible or don't really reflect the true costs and benefits of recycling something as complex as a modern vehicle.
Okay, the fee structures need to be realistic and fair. What about the actual taking apart of the car, the dismantling?
Well, their position there is very much in line with that market-driven theme. They want to empower the dismantlers, the waste operators, to make decisions based on market signals. Which parts are worth removing? Which materials? How best to do it?
Let the experts on the ground decide what makes economic sense.
Largely, yes. They stress the need to really evaluate the technical feasibility and the proportionality of any rules that mandate removing specific parts. Basically, don't force dismantlers to take out a tiny component if it's incredibly difficult, and the environmental gain is minimal compared to the cost and effort.
Find that sweet spot between regulation and market efficiency.
That's the idea. They really advocate caution against overregulation. Regulatory measures, they argue, should only be put in place if there's clear evidence of environmental benefit, not just for the sake of having a rule. It's about effective circularity, not just ticking boxes on mandates that might add cost without much gain.
Which brings us back quite neatly to that no one fits all solution principle, NOFIS, and balanced EPR.
Right, exactly. This seems to be a really foundational idea for ACEA. They keep coming back to it. Vehicles are unique, they're complex, they need their own sector-specific regulation.
Not just lumped in with general waste rules?
Definitely not. Trying to force them into broader rules just doesn't work, they argue. Because cars last so long, have so many different materials, complex safety systems, functional needs. It's just a different beast.
It's not just about cars versus, say, fridges. It's also about differences within the vehicle world itself, right?
Absolutely. They made a strong point that the ELVR has to recognize the huge differences between vehicle categories. You've got L category mopeds, motorbikes, M category passenger cars, vans, N category trucks, O category trailers.
They're all very different.
Totally different structures, materials, end-of-life challenges. The regulation needs to be smart enough to have specific requirements tailored for these different types.
So the ELVR needs to be specific to the auto sector and specific within the sector based on vehicle type.
That's precisely it. And ACEA believes the overall objective set in the ELVR should reflect the long-term needs and realities of the industry itself. Promoting sustainability in a way that's practical, economically viable for the long run, not just ticking boxes based on maybe short-term political goals.
That does raise a really interesting challenge, though, doesn't it? How do you create a regulation that's consistent and harmonized across all of Europe?
Which you need for the single market.
Right. But at the same time, have rules that are flexible and tailored enough for this huge variety of vehicles, from a little scooter to a massive articulated lorry. That sounds like a very tricky tightrope for regulators to walk.
It absolutely is. And finding that balance, harmonization versus tailoring, is probably one of the biggest challenges in crafting effective rules for any complex industry like this.
Okay, so let's try and pull together ACEA's perspective. based on what they presented in Warsaw. They're clearly calling for the ELVR to be the single main law for vehicle circularity.
Yeah, designed for vehicles, not a copy-paste job from other sectors.
They want that functional framework. Clear steps methodology first, then targets, then implementation, with industry heavily involved in writing the detailed rules.
And consistent enforcement, using tools like a proper EU-wide STOT.
On targets, they're pushing hard for feasibility, realism. That stepped approach for plastics, for example, with built-in reviews.
And they want inclusive, market-driven sourcing for recycled materials, no mandated closed loops, let the market innovate with a technology-neutral approach.
Plus, even though ELVs are valuable, they're flagging issues with financial transparency between producers and recyclers.
And asserting producers' rights to manage their own collection, calling for a review of fee modulation, and wanting dismantlers empowered by market logic, while cautioning against regulation without clear benefits.
It really paints a picture of wanting a regulation that's, above all, practical, economically sound, and truly understands the unique complexity of vehicles. Effective, but without unnecessary red tape or rigid rules that ignore reality.
That sums it up well. And digging into this, why does this industry view matter to, well, to you listening? Because these rules, they're going to directly shape the cars and vans and trucks you might buy or rely on down the line.
Yes.
They'll influence the materials used, how easy vehicles are to repair, to take apart at the end. They'll shape the whole system for collecting old cars. And yeah, ultimately, they could affect costs all along the chain, from manufacturing to recycling. It's about the entire life of the vehicle.
From the designer's screen to the scrapyard crusher,
yeah.
These rules touch every stage.
Exactly. It's where the big ideas of the circular economy meet the road, quite literally.
Which leaves us with a final thought to chew on. If, as ACEA argues, recycling these end-of-life vehicles is already largely profitable because the materials themselves have value, what is the perfect role for detailed regulation here? How much prescriptive detail is truly necessary to push environmental performance higher versus maybe just setting clear goals and letting market forces guided by those goals, but not micromanaged, drive the innovation needed for better vehicle circularity? Where do you draw that line between enabling the market and dictating to it?